There's another request for a Fatiha for one of the brothers in the area who died recently. His name is Ali Raza Qasimi. Please recite a Fatiha for his soul. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Imam Hussain, in his mission statement before leaving for Karbala, stated the reason for him moving out of Medina, standing up against Yazid. Not only the reason, but also the method of how he's going to do it. And this was said when he said, "Innama kharajtu li talab al-islah fi ummati jaddi." I am leaving in order that I may bring about reform in the ummat of my grandfather. Wa uridu an a'mura bil ma'ruf wa anha 'anil munkar. That I want to do amr bil ma'ruf and nahy 'anil munkar. Wasiro besirate jaddi wa abi, and I want to practice the sirat of my grandfather and father. And by saying this, he brought our attention and focus to the sirat of the Prophet. When we looked at the sirat of the Prophet, we saw that this is very difficult. In fact, it is easier, as we had mentioned and discussed, it's easier to go and give our lives under the flag of Imam Hussain. It's easier to sacrifice everything we have to walk in this path. It's easier to go through the trials that a person had in Karbala, that the soldiers had in Karbala. But it's difficult at the same time to practice the sirat of the Prophet. Such was his practice, such was, you know, you see in many situations, as we have mentioned, that people could not understand, they could not tolerate, they could not handle what the Prophet did. They couldn't digest it, they couldn't understand it, they couldn't comprehend it. In fact, they ended up opposing many things he did. They ended up fighting against many things he did. They ended up losing trust in him for many things he did. Not just him, but also the imams. Imam Hassan making bay'at and a treaty with Muawiyah. And you see that the Shias, the people who are in the army of Imam Hassan, they come to him and say, you know, you have humiliated us. You know, you have brought us down. You know, shame on you. They couldn't understand it. Their minds did not reach that far. And so when we looked at this behavior, we looked at this this interaction of people living in the time of the Prophet and the Imam with our Prophet and Imams, we saw that what they had to go through. Now obviously, yesterday I spoke that when we looked at ourselves, we see that, would we behave like that? Would we have interacted like that? And we see that no. I mean, for example, right now, if the Prophet came right now, if the Imam comes right now, would we behave like that with them, like the people of their time did? We see that no, we have come a long way. We have come a long way that we would talk up to the Prophet, or we will question him, or we would doubt him. In fact, You know, when he comes, how would we feel if he's around us, if he's in our midst? We'll see there will be that love and adoration, that complete respect and that complete 100% trust that we are ready to do what you ask us to do. That's it. You know, just, you know, tell us how high to jump, we'll jump. Right? We will not ask any questions. We will not doubt or have any misgivings about the decisions you make, whatever you say. My friends, when we have come this far that we can have that much trust for our ulama, then imagine how much more will we trust our imam when he comes back. I mean, if we have that same trust for someone who's not masoom, someone who is not infallible, someone who is just like you and me, but has been affected by the Prophet and the Imams, and has learned the knowledge of the Prophet and the Imams, then we have so much trust in him that we are ready to give our lives if they ask us to do so. Now imagine how far we have come along. That if the Imam comes, we would not even for a second have any misgivings when the Imam comes and raises his flag. You see how far we have come. So now when we look at how far we have come, this growth of ours as an ummah, as a nation, what is the secret behind this? This, my friend, it did not come about by accident. This had a lot to do with the teachings and education and the sacrifices of Ahlul Bayt. Imam Hussein alayhi salam went a long way. His shahadat went a long way in highlighting the seerat of the Prophet and making it a part of our lives. See, what he had done, what he raised, the issues he raised, the path he walked, went a long way in which we are able to now look at that, and the seerat of the Prophet came close to us and his respect gained prominence in our eyes, in our hearts, and in our minds. From the start, we see that the people did not understand the Prophet. They did not have a clear understanding of the Prophet. And I'm talking about general people. Now, there were those who were influenced by the Prophet and where they were affected by the Prophet. I'll mention about them in the second part of my speech, because we need to know them also. I'm just speaking about those, you see that, who, for example, lived in the time of the Prophet, but they, you know, looked at the Prophet just like them. You know? And obviously, you see that the seerat of the Prophet, of being one of the people, had a lot to do with that. Because, my friends, understand this. Not everyone has the right reaction to humility. Not everyone has the right reaction to humility and humbleness. If someone is humble and if someone is, you know, trying to be, you know, trying to make himself have humility in front of others, you see, not everyone will react in the same way to that. Those who understand the quality of humility as being good, they will look at it and say, he's a good person. Listen to him. He's a good person. Listen to him. But those people who don't regard it as a value, who don't regard it as a moral, they look at himself, he has no guts. You know, he has no guts, he's a sissy. Right? That's what they'll say, he's a sissy. Right? He's not that strong. Such people like they always like a person like Muawiyah to rule them. Because he's a man's man. You know, a man's man who, you know, if you piss off the Prophet, he'll forgive you. If you piss off Muawiyah, he'll kill you. So he's more of a man, you know. You don't mess around with a man like Muawiyah. Right? You see, some people, that's their reacting to humbleness and humility. That's how they react to it. I mean, they themselves are messed up, and that's why they want people who are messed up to rule over them. Right? So now when people, they had many types of reactions to the Prophet. There are many types of reaction to the prophet. There are those people who had an adverse reaction. It's not because of the prophet. It's because their eyes are crossed. Their vision is blurred. Their hearts are dirtied. Their lives are filthy. That's why when they see the world around them, they see it differently than those people who have a clear vision, whose hearts are clean, whose intentions are pure. When they live and when they see goodness, they appreciate goodness. So you see, many people did not recognize the prophet, so they reacted in an adverse way to the prophet. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now obviously there were those people who had their motives also. They had ulterior motives to erase the memory of the prophet, to take the people away from the prophet because of their own self-interest, because they were in charge and they didn't want people to know about the prophet, because the more you learned about the prophet, the more it made them look bad. So in order to erase the prophet's memory, they banned hadith. They banned hadith. They did not want people to write down the hadith of the prophet, the speeches of the prophet. This was an ongoing thing, even in the life of the prophet. My friends, there are people who were asking others, whenever they hear a speech of the prophet, don't write it down, don't write it down. Don't write it down. Now, there will be many people who would want to write down. We have one riwayat that says, as an example I'm saying, one riwayat that says that this young man, whenever he used to hear the prophet speak, he would write down the speech. Right? He would write it down. He had a habit. You know, I want to, he says, this is our prophet. I want to write down his speeches so that they can be here forever. You know, like that. So someone came to him. You know, like in a speech, you know, you see, for example, those people who are actually interested in the knowledge, they will look at the speaker and this and that. Those who are not interested and have some other motives, they'll always, you know, look around, you know, like what are other people doing, right? What are other people doing? So now when you look around and see what other people are doing, now obviously you notice, you know, like you see someone writing down something, you see someone nodding, you see someone smiling, you see someone, you know, looking at his watch. You know, and you see like all kinds of different reactions. So now what happened is that this young man who used to write down the speeches of the prophet was approached by another companion of the prophet, so-called. So he was approached by him. He said, so what are you doing? You know, he said, well, I'm writing down the speech of the prophet, you know, because he's a prophet and I really want to make sure that these speeches, you know, are, you know, handed down, you know, to our children and this and that. And when this companion heard that, now the companion is apparently closer to the prophet than this young man is, right? He's apparently closer to the prophet than this young man is, you know, he's like, you know, way up there to this young man. He's looking up to him. You know, right? He's looking up to him like an alim, a big alim speaking to you, Ayatollah speaking to you, you know? You're like, oh, I'm writing this down, agha, you know, I'm writing this down, please, this and that. And the agha, right, he says to him right away, he bursts up angrily. What are you doing? This and that, tear it up. He became so angry at him that the young man says that from that time onwards, I never wrote down another speech of the prophet. Can you imagine that? How the speeches and the hadith of the prophet were trying to be erased. How they were trying to be erased. This was being done in a very systematic way. That people don't do this. They don't have a habit of doing this. My friends, Abdullah ibn Zubair was an enemy. He was an enemy of Yazid. That doesn't mean he's good. Right? That doesn't mean he's good. Even though he's an enemy of Yazid, but still, you know, enemy, he might be an enemy of whom we hate, but he doesn't have to be good. we can work with him, we'll see this and that. An enemy of an enemy is a friend in the sense that you work with him, but he doesn't become your companion. Right? So this Abdullah ibn Yazid, for a whole era, it says about 40 weeks, he banned the mention of the name of the Prophet from any speeches and every khutbah in all the masjids. He banned the mention of the Prophet's name. That do not mention the Prophet's name. Don't mention the Prophet's name. That's it. Don't mention the Prophet's name. No khutbah, no place you will see that anyone would mention the Prophet's name. Now you have to do it in azan, you have to do it in prayer. He couldn't take it out of there. If he had the choice, he would take it out of there also. But everywhere he could, he banned it. Under his rule, wherever people used to follow him in Makkah and Medina and all those places that he took over. Right? And when did he restart it? You know when he restarted it? After the Shahadat of Imam Hussein. You see, the Shahadat of Imam Hussein had that effect on him that, you know what? Let's bring back the name of the Prophet.
Labbaik Ya Hussein. Labbaik Ya Hussein.
Labbaik Ya Hussein. Labbaik Ya Hussein. This, my friends, the effect of the seerat of the Prophet. Imagine how this happens. Even to those who are bad. They said, listen, if we get rid of the name of the Prophet, look at what Yazid did. He tried to disclaim wahi. He tried to disclaim revelation and the Prophet. We don't want to become like that. No. Mention the name of the Prophet now. You see, again, brought it back. My friends, one of the reasons why you see in history and amongst these people that they have this view of the Prophet, that they think that he's like one of them, is because of the huge amount of disrespect that was done to the Prophet. And he tolerated that. In order that he becomes close to the people and love them. In order that he, because of the compassion he had for them. And there used to be a lot of disrespect for him. It is surprising, for example, I'll mention some examples here so that you just see how they used to speak to the Prophet. And these are people who are close to him, who are his students, who are, for example, Muslims. These are people who are spoke to him. For example, they would come to him and said, Ya Rasulullah, this thing you said, if this is from you, we don't want to accept it. If this is from Allah, let him send a curse on us. You see? I mean, understand this. If someone like that even tells something like that to, for example, an alim, everyone will be like feeling bad. What is this? Who is this person? And this person is saying this to the Prophet. Everyone's looking at him like that. One time Rasulullah is trying to divide the spoils. After the battle, right? He's trying to divide the spoils into something. Everyone is like watching and this and that. One person just comes along and just bluntly, blatantly says, make sure you divide it right, be fair to the Prophet. He tells the Prophet, be fair, divide it right, be just with others. I was like, so who should we give the job to? Right? Who should we give the job to? Some people, because they're unknowing, they don't know what's right and wrong. They don't think before they speak. They say things that are just dumb because they don't understand what's right and wrong in a complete way, my friends. This is why they just come and say things. They think they're right. Right? I'm trying to establish justice here. But you have to see, my friend, who are you to establish justice when someone who is more just, like the Prophet, is in the midst? Was he sent to establish justice amongst people, or were you? My friends, understand this. So what happened? This understanding is not there. They don't have that understanding. One time, for example, and this is, this hadith is false, right? I'll mention this to you right now. This hadith that I'm going to mention is false. It's not even a true hadith. It's just a lie. Right? And the lie was meant to make someone look good. Right? That's what that these meant. But it's written down in the books. It's there. So that's why I'm mentioning it to you. Mentioning to you what has been said. what has been said about the prophet. For example, they said that he was in the midst of the people in the masjid, in the gathering, that someone who is, you know, very well known and respected came inside. So as he came inside there, right away, you see Rasulullah, you know, he made his dress, straightened out his dress, you know, he sat up straight. This is a lie, as I'm saying. This is a lie, right? This is a lie. So now he straightened out this dress, and then the people commented to the prophet. Now this is in the books, a Sahih book, right? And in the Sahih book, it's written that they commented to the prophet that, you know what? You have this honor and shame when this guy is here. Why can't you be like that all the time? Right? Why can't you have decency? In other words, why can't you be decent all the time? Understand this. This is in the books. Now, my friends, when you read such things and when you say that this is a part of Islam and this is true and this is real, obviously, your view and how you think about the Prophet is not going to be the way that he really is. By looking at this, then you're like, how is it that his students became better than him? I mean, the students that he left behind, the people who are there, they, I mean, in their actions and their behavior, they're better than what is being portrayed in these books. So obviously, with all the disrespect that happened, this is the case, my friends. These people used to burn when they see how much the believers love the Prophet. Abu Sufyan used to burn in his heart when he used to see the Prophet making wudu and those who love him, the believers, taking his water of wudu as tabarruk to their house. It used to burn him that look at these people, look at these people, how they behave with him as he is some sort of, you know, holy. Understand, it used to burn him. It used to make him so angry that people can love him so much. People can adore him so much. They follow him so much. This is, my friends, where I'm coming towards. So yes, on one hand, you see all of these people, you know, who had all these types of behavior with them. But on the other hand, you also saw people who had recognized him. And I want to give some examples of those people. Don't think that, oh, yeah, everyone was like that with him, this and that. If that was the case, we wouldn't have Islam, my friends. Right? We wouldn't have Islam. You know, there are many people that the Prophet influenced to such an extent that a society that is now termed as Jahiliyat, a society of ignorance, had become a society of enlightenment. There are some people who learned from the Prophet. There are many who learned from the Prophet. Many who were affected by the Prophet. Many of whom found enlightenment just by being around the Prophet. My friends, in his time I'm talking about, now we know. And this is another whole different subject. Even now, that same effect that he had on those people, you see he has on us also. Keep that in mind when I'm speaking about the examples of these people. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. There was an oil seller in Medina. And he, when he recognized the Prophet, when he learned about the Prophet, he became so attracted to him. He started loving him so much that every morning when he would leave his house, he would come to see the Prophet. In other words, not see the Prophet like meet him, but see him from afar. Just see him. That would be his daily routine. Just he would just glance at the Prophet and then go to work. This was his daily life. This was his daily life. Every day, you know, just like, you know, like for example, he would come out and see, you know, where's the Prophet? Oh, there he is. Okay, good. Then he'll just go to work, you know. Alhamdulillah, that's all I want. I saw the Prophet, you know. Just he would look at him and that day was made for him. It was good for him. Now nothing could happen that day that would disturb him. My friends, understand what is love and what is ziyarat. You see, what is love and ziyarat? The reason why they say, you know, that when you go to make ziyarat, don't stay too long. Make ziyarat and go away. That's it. It's because the idea of love is that. You know, you have your life to live. Just come, see. That's enough. Alhamdulillah. That's all I wanted. Just to see you. My heart is fulfilled. Just to see you. That's it. He used to see that and he used to go away. Right? He didn't used to come to ask him questions or bother him or anything like that. Or stay in his way or just keep glaring at him so he gets disturbed. He didn't even want to disturb him. He would just see him and he would walk away. Really. And that one sight, that one glance was enough. Imagine if all the people were like that. How would that society be? If all the people had that love for the Prophet, do you want that? That all the people should love the Prophet like that? I mean, is it a desire in you to see that Rasulullah be loved like that? Really, my friends? I mean, do we love him like that? You know, if we love him like that, then you know what? We would want others to love him like that also. He says, you don't know how special he is. Love him. You will understand it. My friends, just understand it this way. Understand it this way. Right? If you want, if you have that love, if you have the love that he had, if you had that love that he had for Imam Zaman, you would want others to love him also. Right? You would want him to love him. Doesn't it make you hurt that others don't recognize him and they say these awful things about him, not knowing who he is? Doesn't it make you upset that others don't have the ma'rifat of Imam Zaman and that he could help them, that he is there to help them and save them, but they don't understand him and they say these awful things? What is it in you that would want that, that desire? You see, when you love someone, it happens. You see, when you love someone, when you have love for someone, then when someone doesn't understand your love, you're like, why don't you understand my love? Why don't you understand this? This is why I love him. This is why I love him. If you can just see what I see, I want you to see all the qualities. I want you to see those blessings, that greatness that he has. My friends, that oil seller had that love for Rasulullah. He used to watch him all the time and he used to do that. And you know what? Rasulullah knew this also. You see, Rasulullah knew this, that this person is looking at me. Every day he would come to look at me. Every day he would come just to take a glance at me. That's Rasulullah. And you know what he would do? Sometimes when he was in a masjid like this and there are many people around him, this and that, and he would see that this person is looking for him, he would just stand up so he can be seen by him. You know, he would just stand up and sit down. When you stand up, the person, oh, there he is. Thank you. Alhamdulillah. He would go away. Subhanallah. One day, this oil seller, you know, you see that he saw the Prophet and went away. And, you know, he came back again. He came back again. He saw the Prophet again. And this time the Prophet said, come here. He said, Ya Rasulullah, what happened? He says, every day you come and you see me once and go. Why did you come here twice? He says, you know, for some reason, when I left you, my heart just called out and said, go back. See him one more time. I was disturbed. I came back. I had to see you a second time. Just my heart said that. My friends, this is, you know, those people. I mean, why was he affected? Was Rasulullah giving him something? Was he doing something for him? Was he benefiting in any way? Any worldly way or any way that he was, you know, gaining something from the Prophet? We see, no, he wasn't gaining anything. So why was he so much in love with what? There must be something that Rasulullah has that he's in love with him like this. That he's in love with him like this. My friends, understand this. One day he didn't come to prayer. when he didn't come to prayer. And when Rasulullah saw that he didn't come for prayer, he went to see where he is. He says, this person who would never miss a day, he's not here. Let me go. It's what happens. When someone truly is a lover, you know where they are, what's happening with them. Why? Because you know where they can be found, because they love this. Anyone who loves Imam Hussein, you know he'll be in the majlis of Imam Hussein. If he's not there one day, you'll mention, what happened? Why didn't you come? You see, why are you asking him? Because you know that he would not miss it. You know he would not miss it. That's why you will ask him. That's why you will ask him, where were you? We miss you. Right? Rasulullah, one day he did not come. He said, where is he? Let me go and find out. Rasulullah went to find out where he is. He reached there. They said, he's at home. He didn't come for work. He went to his home and he saw that he was dying. And he was dying. Right? In his last death, and he died. He died. And Rasulullah was on his deathbed and he was, just grieving over him. Some of the people said that, Ya Rasulullah, you know this person? I mean, no one knew he knew him. You see, this was a love that was hidden. This is a love that was secret. No one knew that he knew him or had any sort of this type of relationship or anything like that. They say, Rasulullah, this person, he's a Muslim, but he had certain faults in him. He had this fault. They mentioned a certain fault. I don't want to mention it. He said, he had this certain fault in him. The mistake, a sin, this and that he used to do. Whatever sin it is. And Rasulullah, when he heard it, he said, because of the love that he has for me, Allah has forgiven it. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. My friends, the love of Rasulullah washes away your sins. See, it washes away your sins. Rasulullah said his sin, that fault that he had is forgiven. Allah has forgiven him for that. I mean, what else do you want? Rasulullah is saying this. So now he doesn't have that fault anymore. Worry about your own faults. Right? Do you have a means to wash away your faults and sins? I mean, at least he had a way. He had a means. He had a wasila. That was the love of Muhammad. That was the love of the Prophet. He had that. Do you have that means? Imagine this. This, my friends, this is the attachment. This is what it is. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Right? And I'm not speaking about, for example, example like Ali or Salman or these people. I'm speaking about the average people. The average people. And I want to give these examples to you. And then I'll mention what happened to them. Give the examples to you. I want to mention what happened to them, Bedouin. Someone lives in the desert. Right? He came to the Prophet and said that, Ya Rasulullah, that day when you came to where I lived and this and that, I helped you. You asked me for help and I helped you. And you never repaid me for that. He said, you never repaid me for that. I want my wages for it. Right? I want the return for it. I want my reward for it. So Rasulullah said, tell me, what do you want? What is it you want? How much? Whatever it is, inshallah, I will take it. I want to take it for you. This person went away. He said, all right. He said, what do you want? He said, just give me a minute. Let me think about it. He went. He thought. He came back to the Prophet and said, Ya Rasulullah, this is what I want from you. He said, what is it? He says, I want to be your neighbor in Jannah. I want to be your neighbor in Jannah. So, you're jumping too high, I mean, that's a lot to ask for. I mean, if you had asked for Jannah, that itself, okay. But you're asking to be at the level that I am in Jannat. You're asking to be my neighbor in Jannah. Do you understand? I mean, really, this is hard. This is hard. And what's going through your mind? I mean, really, imagine this, what's going through his mind. What's going on? What's going through your mind that you're asking for this? You know, for something else easier, something like that. Rasulullah, no matter how much I think, no matter how much I think, I say that no matter how much good I do, no matter how much prayers I make, no matter how much du'as I do, no matter how much fastings I do, I can never do enough to come to your level. That's why I'm asking for something that I am unable to do. In other words, what he said, my friend, understand this. Now in the real meaning of what he said. He said, Rasulullah, I will reach Jannat. But you know what? In Jannat, I don't want to be away from you. I will miss you. I want to be with you. If I want to come to Jannat, I want to come because of you. Because you are my neighbor. You know, then Jannat will be worth it. See, my friends, this... And you know what Rasulullah asked him? I mean, where did you get this idea from? He says, you know, I mean, did you think of it? Or, you know, like, where did he get this idea from? Why? He wants to know his ma'rifat. What kind of ma'rifat do you have that you ask for this? I mean, it's not a simple thing you ask for. It required thought. It required vision. Right? It required vision. He said, no, it's my thought. Then... Yeah, Rasulullah also then put his head down. He started thinking, this is a big request. Huge request. How am I going to do this, this and that? It's not easy. Right? And then Rasulullah said, all right, I will do it for you. I will do it for you, but you have to help me also. أَعِنِّي بِكَثْرِتِ السُّجُودِ. You know, help me by increasing your prostrations to Allah. Please help me also. I will grant you your wish, but help me by increasing your sajda. This is how you will get there. My friend, understand this. This is, subhanAllah, what can I say? The love of Rasulullah increases your ma'rifat and heightens your vision. This is the second thing that it does. You see, the first thing, it washes away your sins. Second thing, it increases your vision. When you love Rasulullah, someone who loves the Prophet is not someone who has a low vision or some small goal in his life. Many people came to him and asked him for help, this and that. You know, Rasulullah said, what do you want? They said, 40 sheep. All right, 40 sheep, go ahead, take it. You can ask me for Jannat, but you ask for 40 sheep. That's your vision. That shows how much you love me. If you love me, your ma'rifat, your vision is high. Your goal is high. When you ask me for something, you will ask me for something that's worth it. Subhanallah. Oise Qarani. Oise Qarani, another person. He came to meet the Prophet in Medina, and we saw that Rasulullah was not there. Rasulullah was not there. He had gone out somewhere. And while he was in Medina, he was asking... He was asking other people, so where's the Prophet? What's going on with the Prophet? This and that and all these things. So what happened is that, you know, like for example, in the midst of the talk, you know, and everything that he heard of the Prophet, you see his life is changing. They said, oh, he went there for this purpose. It's like, wow, this is another whole chapter of my life. This is a whole vision in my life. It's changing. And as soon as he heard that, you know, he was in the battle of Uhud and his tooth was broken, his tooth was broken. He took a rock and broke his own tooth. He says that my Prophet's tooth was broken? No, no. I want to break my own tooth now. I want to feel the pain that he felt. You see, this is a matter of love. This is a matter of love. You know? I want to feel the pain that he felt. My friends, I'm telling you, love of Rasulullah, Sirat. Now these people are affected by Rasulullah. I'll give you one more example. So one more example for today, inshallah. And sometimes else, inshallah, we'll see. You know, a youth, he came up to the Prophet. Youngster, came up to the Prophet. You know, and you know, Rasulullah looked at him and he saw that his eyes, you know, when Rasulullah looked at you can see people who have ma'rifat, who have understood something, you know, who have learned something. You see it in their eyes, how they see you, how they look at you. And here you see Rasulullah, he looked at him and said, "What's up?" He says, "Kayfa asbahta?" What's going on? You know, so he looked at him and said, "Ya Rasulullah, I have understood what is heaven and what is hell. I have understood those who are bound to heaven, and I have seen those who are bound to hell. I can see around you who's going to go to heaven and who's going to go to hell. I can see right now, I have understood this. My vision has come. I just see it and I know it. This is going to hell, this is going to heaven." You know, Rasulullah said, "All right, you know, keep that to yourself." He said, "Keep that to yourself. Don't mention it. Don't need to mention it. You keep it to yourself. What does it happen? What do you want now from Allah? What do you want from Allah now? I mean, Allah gave you this ilm, right? This knowledge. You have reached it with your own vision that Allah gave you this tawfiq, this blessing, this knowledge, whatever you call it, this enlightenment. What do you want now from Allah?" He says, "Ya Rasulullah, there's only one thing I want from Allah right now." He says, "What is that?" He says, "I want to become shaheed under you. I want to give up my life and become a shaheed and martyr under you. That's what I want. That's all I want." So it's because of your love that I've reached this ma'rifat. You know, it's you are the one who made me reach here. My friends, how many of these people existed there? So many people. That Rasulullah affected them in that way. So many people he affected them in that way. His seerat is such that his lifestyle was such that it will affect you and change you. And so many people became like that. So what happened to them? Where were they? Why didn't they help Imam Ali? You know why they didn't help Imam Ali? Because you see, all of those people who truly were blessed by the presence of the Prophet and who gained ma'rifat with the presence of the Prophet, they became shaheed in the time of Rasulullah. They died in Allah's way. They gave their lives to protect Islam. They gave their lives. So all the people who were leftovers, you see, my friends, understand this. Here's what happens. Anytime you see someone, you know, who is, for example, you know, you see like some people who are Hizbullah, very strong and dedicated and this and that. So what happens is that there's always that few people who are very much, and you see that others people who come around them and hang out with them, they also become, you know, outwardly like them. You know, they also become outwardly like them. They start wearing the, you know, the scarves, you know, they start wearing the, you know, handbands, and they start wearing this and that and all kinds of things. They start wearing that. Why? Because this is my gang, this is my group, this is what happens. While that inner core group is growing inwardly, the outer group is growing outwardly. Understand this. There was that inner group that truly believed in Rasulullah. "Ya Rasulullah, you brought us this," and that's it. Their lives are for this purpose. Then there's those other people who looked at them and said, yeah, just like he said. Yeah, we're here. You know, we're here. Right? And, you know, they just get burned. So now what happens is that because they did not have that inward growth, their ma'rifat didn't grow, their love didn't grow. Now what happened is that when these people die away, because these will be the first to die in every movement. In every Islamic movement, the best will be the first to die. Because they will be the first ones who want that blessing of shahadat. They're not waiting. They want to be the first ones. Why should I wait? I want to be the first one. I want to go there first. They die. They are the first ones to give their lives. Now what are left are these leftovers. They're you know, side wings, who outwardly became, you know, like all, they in appearance they became strong, but inwardly they didn't have that. You see, my friends, all of those people died in the time of Rasulullah. What Rasulullah left for Imam Ali were these people. The second hands. The leftovers. Those who grow outwardly, but inwardly they were nothing. There was a vacuum inside. You see? This is why he told Ali that, Ali, after me you're going to have trouble. You see that? Understand the reasoning. Now you see, you know, the seerat of the Prophet had a lot of effect in society. Many people became the bright lights of that region, changed, enlightened the people. But you know what? They gave their lives and they went. They died away. You know, they died away. Badr, those who died in Badr, those who died in Uhud, when you look at those people, even then in those days, people used to say, no, the people of Badr were something else. Because they knew that these people truly believe, no matter what happened, we will give our lives and stand in the way. These are the people Rasulullah influenced. They are the examples you need to look at to see what is the seerat of Rasulullah. Not Abu Sufyan. Oh, look at Abu Sufyan. This is an outcome of Rasulullah's seerat. No, it's not. What does Abu Sufyan have to do with Rasulullah's seerat? His way of life, his practice. You see, my friends, understand this. I'm giving this message to you so that you know. Now, when you looked at that, that's why you see all these people who are leftovers. Now, Imam Ali had to deal with them. Now, Imam Hassan had to deal with them. And Imam Hussein had to deal with them. Right? And now they have to build it up again. Now, Imam Hussein knew that the only way to now build up a new generation of those people that Rasulullah built up, all of the Imam Ali, Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein knew that they will have to sacrifice in order to build up another nation of people that will stand up, and that will have the seerat, and that will practice the seerat. My friends, the seerat of Rasulullah is what we need to learn and practice and try to implement it. If you don't do it, who else will? You will lose the benefits. Yes, you will still be a Muslim. But as I said, if you want to be great, then you have to learn the seerat of the Prophet and live by that seerat. Stand up to it. It's his love that makes you follow that seerat and honor it and respect it. Let me just mention one seerat of the Prophet today. One of the seerat of the Prophet is that he loved children very much. You know, he loved children very much. He cared for them. He was compassionate. And it's not just because of Imam Hussein. You know, yes, we see Imam Hussein's example as his grandson. But even every other children, whatever children you see, he had a special place for children in his seerat. You can say that the seerat of Rasulullah is that he respected and loved children and showed compassion towards it. In other words, if you are a Muslim who follows the Prophet, you would follow that example. Right? You would follow. This is a seerat that happened. One day, someone went to the masjid to pray. And he says this. He says that the Prophet was late for prayers. Prophet was late for prayers. So he wanted to see what's going on. He went outside and he saw that the Prophet is in the street giving rides to children on his back. Giving rides to children on his back, one by one, you know, one kid will say, it's my turn. He's giving rides to children on his back, right? You know, taking them around, okay, you next, giving them around, and people are waiting in the masjid to pray. Right? People are waiting in the masjid to pray. And he says, Ya Rasulullah, you know, what's happening, this and that. He says, oh, I'm giving rights to these children. You know why? Because he said, because, you know, I gave a ride to Hussein, now all his friends want ride also. All his friends want ride also, you know. I mean, Imam Hussein, He wanted a right, so I gave to him. Now his friends want all of them. He said, me too, would you give a right to us also? And he gave a right to them. Right? My friend, understand this. Understand. This is something of, to understand from his character, something to understand from his life. Right? Others are like, you know, come on here, we're all waiting for 5 minutes for prayers. What's going on? It's makruh to waste your time and not pray. Pray in the time of fadila. That's it, this and that. And here you see Rasulullah delaying the prayers, and he's saying that, no way, here, these children. Right? You see, you can understand why we delay. These children cannot understand that. I don't want them to think that, you know what? That I want them to go away. No, this is the way. My friend, understand, there is wisdom when you think and do things. Use the seerat of the Prophet and understand what is the right perspective for you to think. This is how much he loved them. Just because Imam Hussein asked him for it. Right? Imam Hussein asked him for it. That's why he did it. Prophet loved and respected children. One time he was praying, and a child was crying. Right? He was with his mother, child, infant, was crying very much. Child was crying very much, this and that. Just, crying, would not stop crying, And the Prophet was in the prayer. And they said that day the Prophet finished his prayer like lightning. He finished his prayer like lightning. He just hurried up so much that everyone was trying to catch up with him. Finished his prayer like lightning, and he went straight to that child, took that child and calmed him down. He says, don't you see this child is crying? Calm him down. Take care of him. You hurried up prayers. This is Allah. And you know the seerah of the Prophet is that he always, whenever he prayed, he took his time. He was just engrossed in prayers. But when he saw a child crying, he could not tolerate that. Really. He couldn't tolerate that. He finished his prayer fast in order that, did that. In fact, when you look at his orders in the time of war, you see the orders that he had in the time of war. He would tell them that, listen, do not harm children. Do not harm women and children, especially children. Don't do anything to them. Let them be. Right? Let them be. You should not harm them. This is one order and one seerat that this ummah never maintained. This seerat, this compassion for children, this love for children, this is one seerat, when we look at it, it was never maintained. And they abused it. They abused it really badly. Can you imagine that? Ya Allah, my friends, Imam Hussein showed them that when you have guests, you give water. Now the water is closed for Ahlul Bayt. They close the water for Ahlul Bayt. Subhanallah. I want you to understand what that means. On the 7th of Muharram, they closed access to the river. They closed access to water. The order came on the 7th of Muharram, and they said, do not let Hussein get any water. Do not let anyone from his camp get any water. Block all passages to the water. And when Imam Hussein, he came to Karbala, he encamped there because the water was so close, right? The water was so close. Now, when they blocked it off, when they finished the water for Imam Hussein, understand this. I want you to just feel, what do you think happened? What's going on in your mind when you hear this? The water was closed. Obviously Imam Hussein had water left over. Obviously he had water that's left over, stored. And, when they closed the water on the 7th, it doesn't mean that they ran out of water on the 7th. Right? They weren't thirsty for 3 days. They were not thirsty for 3 days. The water was stopped on the 7th. They had water with them. right? That would last maybe a day, maybe two. Well, they weren't expecting that. You know, they had water that was stored. But you know, what are you thinking when this order came? Who would you cry for when the order for stopping the water comes for? You see, again, my friends, understand this. I want you to look at your own self and see what marifat do you have. Who would you cry for when you hear the fact that the water was stopped on the 7th and they were not letting Imam Hussein's army have any water? You see, my friends, would you cry for the children of Hussein? Would you cry for the children of Hussein? Do you think that they would not give water to the children? My friends, understand this. Will you cry for the woman? No. They would give water to the woman. You know, the first one you would cry for? The first one you would cry for? When you hear that the water was stopped, you would start crying for Imam Hussein himself. You know why? Because knowing Hussein, knowing his lifestyle, knowing his practice, when that order came, you know he would be the first one to stop drinking the water. Do you think that Imam Hussein would go on drinking water now, knowing that the water is not coming for his children? Do you think that Imam Hussein would truly say that, okay, let me have some water, knowing that there's no water coming for his woman? My friends, Imam Hussein was the first one to stop drinking the water. He would make it haram on himself that I don't want this water if it's not coming anymore. I would want to keep my family alive and these people alive in my tents. Let them have the water. Ration it out to them. Imam Hussein was the first one to stop drinking the water. This is Imam Hussein. You would cry for Imam Hussein in that way. Now, you know, Imam Hussein, in that way you cry. But when Ashura came and the water ran dry, there was no water. Even on the night of Ashura, this eve that we are here tonight, eve of Ashura, there is no water. There is no water here. There's a riwayat we have from Sakina binte Hussein. You know, the riwayat that we have that she went looking for water in the tents. She said that I was so thirsty on the night of Ashura. This is the night of Ashura. Day of Ashura is coming tomorrow. Ashura is tomorrow on the night of Ashura. Sakina said that I was so thirsty. I went around looking for water. I went around looking for water. Maybe someone has some water that I can drink. Maybe someone has some water. Maybe someone has some water. They looked around. And then she said, you know what? Maybe my aunt Zainab, she always takes care of me. Every time I need of something, I always go to her. Let me go and ask her. Let me go and see if she has water. She went to the tent of Zainab. And she says that I looked inside the tent of Zainab. And Zainab was sitting in her on the ground. My aunt Zainab was sitting on the ground. Ali Asghar was in the lap of Zainab. Zainab is trying to control Ali Asghar. That Asghar, be patient. Asghar, what can I do? I cannot give you water. Sakina said, if my brother Asghar doesn't have water, then how will I get water? I don't want water. This, my friend, this is the situation on the night of Ashura. This is Tasua. This is the night of Ashura, right? And you are here. And this night, when you look at this night and you see this night, if you see that there's no water, you know, it's very hard, my friends. It's very hard. Little children, every time Imam Hussein would walk past a child, they would look up to Hussein. He says, Alatash, Ammu, Alatash. Alatash, Ammu, Alatash. We're dying of thirst, the water. Every time Abbas would find, he would go through the tents and he would go across a child. The child would look up to Ammu Abbas and Ammu Abbas, Alatash, Alatash. Is there any water? Can you get us water? You know, I'll make this dua for you, inshallah. May Allah accept it. My friends, make this dua for you. Understand the meaning of this dua. I'll make this dua for you. Oh Allah, do not put these people in a situation where their children are asking for water and they don't have water to give them. Can you imagine yourself if your child asks for water and you cannot give them water? That if you are thirsty and you can't give them water, how hard it will be for you? How difficult will it be for you that your heart is there and you look into the eyes of your child and says, I don't have water, my son. I don't have water, my son. Imagine this. Imam Hussein, every time a child would ask, his heart would drop. His heart would become heavy. Heavy, it will become heavy, Ya Allah. Now let me tell you this, my friend. You see, the companions of Hussein, do you think that they were just sitting around watching the children of Hussein like this? No. These are the companions of Hussein. Their ma'rifat is way above that, that they would sit around and watch the children of Hussein like this, asking for water and be thirsty. No, they made many plans to get water. They made many plans to get water. You know, they went. Burair and some of the companions made a plan that we will go, we will hit the river, and we will get the water. You see, my friends, I want you to understand this. They made the plan, and they did go, and they did reach the river. They did reach the river. This is the night of Ashura. They did reach the river, and you know what? My friends, the example of Abbas is tomorrow. Today, that example was set by the companions. They said, we will not have a drop of water until the children of Hussein get water. This is there. They went there. They filled the bags. They filled the bags. And now, they wanted to bring that water back to the tents. They wanted to bring that water back to the tents. And then, the soldiers of Yazid, they saw that, and they sent a group of soldiers to stop them. They came to stop them. And now there was a verbal interaction between them. Burair said, this is for the children of Hussein. They said, we can't let it go for anyone in the camp of Hussein. This water is not going anywhere. He says, let this go. Don't you know that these are the children of Rasulullah? He says, our orders stand. We can't let you take this there. Right? And these people said that we will take it even if it costs our lives. He says, then so be it. So be it. They made a human shield around the water bags. And they started walking together. They made a human shield around the water bags. And they started walking together. And they said that we will make sure that this reaches Hussein and his children. Let them do whatever they want to us. We want to get this done before we die. We can't live by hearing the children of Hussein saying Allah Taj and we are there. They made a human shield and they were walking towards there. And these people came to stop them. These people came to stop them. The soldiers came to stop them. They had their swords out. They said, listen, stop it. We don't want to do anything here. They said, you can do what you want. But then they recognized this. They said, listen, if we go to the camp of Hussein, these people will come and we don't trust these people. They might harm the children of Hussein. We don't want to be responsible for their blood being spilled. Is it worth it to take this water there and lead them to the camp and let them come to the camp and that they will harm Hussein and his children? No, we can't be responsible for that. And that's why you see that these people left the water there on the ground, did not touch the water to drink it, and they came back to the tents. They came back and they said that we could not get you water. We couldn't get you water. So many attempts were made, but you see how hard it was for them. Just one thing I want to point out between this whole incident that happened. One altercation they have, verbal altercation, one thing they have, really. That makes you think, my friend. That makes you think. You know, They asked. When they were being refused, they were saying that, no, you can't take the water. They asked, why? Why can't we take water for his children? Why can't we take water to Hussein's camp? You know, they asked him that. You know what the reply they got? And I want you to listen to this reply and just the depth of how evil and where it's coming from. He said, the reason you can't take, the reason this order is given, that Hussein and his people should not have water, is because Imam Ali caused Usman to die thirsty. Usman was killed thirsty, and we have orders that we will kill Hussein thirsty also. My friends, imagine this. The third Khalifa, Uthman, they said, was killed thirsty, and because of that fact that he was killed thirsty and Ali was responsible for that, so now we will kill Hussein thirsty also. My friends, this is where I see, this is where, I mean, really, I want you to understand this. You know, this is a lie, obviously, this is a lie. You know, it's other people who stopped the water from Uthman. It's other people who stopped the water from Usman. There's a whole group of people who were outside, an army of people who were outside the house of Usman, stopping them, stopping anyone from bringing water, and they wanted him to die thirsty. You know, my friends, you know who took the water to Usman's house? Who took the water to Usman's house? Everyone watched it. Ali said to Hussein, Hussein, take the water to Usman's house. Hussein is the one who took the water in the house. Everyone saw Hussein taking it. Allah, with what pen have you written the story of Karbala? The same accusation they're saying about Hussein. Hussein is the very person who took the water for Usman. And today you're killing the same person. You're not giving him water. Ya Allah. My friends, it is hard. It is hard. It is hard with someone. It is hard. Hussein. That is it, my friends. Let's go. Let's go forward. Hussein came forward. Hussein saw his children and they were thirsty. From the night of Ashura, they're thirsty. From this night, they're thirsty. Imagine the thirst. My friends, you cried a lot. And alhamdulillah, you're shedding tears for Imam Hussein and his family. May Allah bless you. May Allah give blessings to your household. May Allah give prosperity to you. May Allah, through the love of Hussein and Zahra that you have in your heart, wash away your sins, make you a companion of our Imam. My friends, we make this dua. In this night, you know, we are not here, as I said. Karbala and Ashura is not to become good. Karbala and Ashura is to become great. We don't sit over here and think that, oh, my sins, how I wish I could wash my sins. You don't sit here and think, oh, Ali Akbar died like that. How bad. I hope I don't die like that. Would you make a wish sitting in the Majlis of Hussein that this doesn't happen to my child? Do you make that dua and say that this doesn't happen to my child? Would you do something like that? No, Karbala says that, Allah, why not my children? Take them, don't take Hussein's children. Spare them, take my children instead. May my children be a ransom for Hussein's children anytime. Hussein, what can we do? You ask for water. Your children are asking for water. You can't do anything. But now you see, sometime a time came to Hussein that where he had to go in front of them to ask for water. And that was when Ali Asghar was dying. Now, Ali Asghar was at a point. My friends, I mean, how long can a child last? A 6-month-old child, how long can he last for? You know, he has cried himself out. He has cried himself out. There are no tears coming out. You know, Imam Hussein, he brings out Ali Asghar. In fact, you know, the situation of Ali Asghar was described by Imam Hussein. You know, he described the situation of Ali Asghar. And he said that, you know, my Ali Asghar, He is, you know, my Ali Asghar, he is at the last stage of his death. You know, and this expression that Imam Hussein used, and it is so eloquent. But the eloquence describes a very descriptive idea of what Imam Hussein is going, what Ali Asghar is going through. You know what that expression is? That expression is used whenever you take a fish out of water. When you take a fish out of water, you know, the fish starts to gasp for water. It can't live. It starts dying, right? That fish starts to die. When you take the fish out of water, it starts to die. But you know, it still has the power and the energy to jump itself back into the water. So it's not jumping up and down. This is the first stage of its death. This is the first stage of its death. It jumps up and down. Then when it loses that energy and it becomes weak, then it can't jump up and down, so it starts to turn left and right. You know, you'll see a fish. Look at a fish when it's dying. It'll start to jump left and right. Right? And then when the fish comes to the last stage of its death, it can't turn left and right. It can't turn left and right anymore. So now all the fish can do is just gasp for air. It just opens its mouth and closes it. Opens its mouth and closes it. Imam Hussein is saying that my Ali Asghar is at that stage of death, that he's just opening his little mouth and closing it, gasping for air. Imagine what Hussein is going through looking at his son like that. Imagine what Umm Rabab is looking at when she's looking at Ali Asghar. Someone give him water. A mother is looking at this 6-month-old. Can you please give him some water? Imam Hussein takes Ali Asghar and tells them, listen, he's at the last stage of his death. Give him some water. Give him some water. He might survive. He might live. He hasn't done anything wrong to you. Why are you doing this to him? Your problem is with me. Take my life, but don't do this to this child. This child hasn't done nothing to you. And he called out to people. He says, remember. Remember you. You are this and that. And he called out to them. And they were like ashamed of Hussein. They looked back and said, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? This was hurting them. This was hurting them. Hussein looked at them. This was a collection of cowards that are out there. Imam Hussein is waiting for someone to have some natural instincts of a parent to spark something in themselves that they will say, it is only a glass of water. What's that going to do? Even symbolically, what's that going to do? Even if Hussein takes it, what's that going to do? He's alone now. Don't you see that? Abbas is dead. Abbas is dead. Ali Akbar is dead. His companions are gone. Hussein is alone. Even if he steals the water from Ali Asghar and takes it, how's that going to save him now? Give it to him. He's dying of thirst. This child is dying of thirst. Ali Asghar changed the opinion of the army in such a way that no other soldier can do it. No other speech can do it. This was a speech of Hussein that was so strong that every heart that you see, the hearts of the army were moved. And truly, they were starting to recognize what humanity is. They were trying to see that, listen, we need to do this much. Look at him. This child is dying. He's out there in the sun being held by his father. He's dying of thirst. What is wrong with us? Do something. But you know what? This was a speech of Hussein that moved the people. And when Omar ibn Sa'd saw this change in his army, he knew Hussein, that Hussein, this is Hussein you're dealing with. He called Hurmala and said, Hurmala, ikta kalam al-Hussein. He said, ikta kalam al-Hussein. Hurmala, cut the speech of Hussein. Hurmala, cut the speech of Hussein. Hussein's speech was moving everyone. I want you to cut his speech. Hurmala went forward. He was getting himself ready. Hurmala was an archer. In the meanwhile, Imam Hussein, when he stood there with the sun in his hand, he stood there, he saw that these people are doubting him. Maybe he's stealing it, or maybe he will take the water from Ali Asghar. But why would he do that? Why would any father do that? I mean, the worst of the worst. Why would they take water from their child who's dying and take it? What kind of opinion do you have of Hussein? Isn't your heart hurt by this fact that they think that Hussein would take the water from Ali Asghar's mouth? Oh, this should destroy our hearts right now. This should kill us right now. I mean, what do you think of Hussein? This is Hussein, the grandson of Rasulullah. This is the grandson of Rasulullah. Imam Hussein, when he heard that, that itself is very so much hard for him to take. So he put the child on the ground and he says, listen, I will move away from this child. This child has no life left in him anyway. You come and feed him. At least give him some water so he can survive this. He can survive this. No one move forward. No one move forward. So now Hussein saw that. He came to pick up Ali Asghar who was on the ground. The ground is hot. The ground is hot. The sun is hotter. The ground is hot. The sun is hotter. And the throat of Ali Asghar is even hotter than that. The throat of Ali Asghar is harder than that. You know, what can I say, my friend? What can I say? What can I say? You want to know what I want to say? You want to know what I want to say to you so you can give your condolences to Fatima? My friends, that when you want to cut something, you make it hot. Imagine that Asghar's neck is hot. And that arrow that came through his neck. In what way did it slice his neck? Hurmala shot the arrow. The arrow came into the neck of Ali Asghar. It went through the neck with such ease. It went through the neck in such a way that it was embedded in the hand of Hussein. Now Hussein's hand and Asghar's neck is attached with that arrow. If Hussein moves his hand, the neck moves with it. If Hussein moves it down, the neck moves with it. Hussein looks at this situation. He says, what has happened? Looks at this situation. Asghar's neck is attached to mine. If I take it out, then you know an arrow the way it's made? You know the arrow the way it's made? It has a head. When the head goes through, it's easier going through than taking out. When you take it out, the wider part is there and it will tear out the insides. It will tear out the insides. I don't know how Hussein took out that arrow. But however he took that arrow out, only Hussein could have withstood that hurt in his heart. Only Hussein could have withstood that. Hussein took that arrow out. Ali Asghar's blood started pouring out. Took the blood in his hand. He took the blood in his hand. And now he wants to throw it on the ground.
He wants to throw it on the ground. He decided against it, as if the ground is calling out to Hussein. Hussein, don't throw this blood on this ground. Don't throw the blood on the earth. The earth will never grow anything out of this injustice. Hussein wants to throw it in the air, but he decides against it, as if the sky is calling out to Hussein. Hussein, don't throw the blood of Asghar onto the sky. The sky will never rain after this. Hussein takes the blood of Ali Asghar and smears it on his face. There is no balance for this blood here. There is no justice that will do justice to the blood here in this dunya. Hussein knew that neither the earth can do it, neither the sky can do it. Now the only place where I will find justice of this blood is with my father and my grandfather. I will take it on my face and I will show my grandfather. Ya Rasulallah, is this what your ummah done to us? Look what they have done to us. When Fatima will go on the day of judgment, and she will stand on the day of judgment, she will call out to them, and she will bring the shirt of Ali Asghar and says, this is enough, the cradle of Ali Asghar, that this is enough of justice for us. Ha, 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 ha.